Have you ever wanted to be the first to know if aliens really exist? Well, with Nebula, you can be! Nebula is the streaming service that's home to It's Probably Not Aliens, as well as our YouTube channels. And the best part? All of our content goes up early on Nebula. So when we break first contact with ET, you'll be the first to find out. That's right, you'll be able to listen to the next episode of this show before anyone else. Plus, we post bonus content that you won't find any other place. And the best part? By signing up for Nebula at nebula.tv/probablynotaliens, you're directly supporting the show and both of us. So don't wait any longer. Join Nebula today and be the first to know if this time it really is aliens.
Here's the thing. We've established multiple times, especially in the last episode of us doing corrections of all the stuff we got wrong. We've established that we are not good at movie trivia.
No.
And the easiest thing to pull to, the easiest thing to do a cold open about here is the movie Battle Los Angeles. But as far as I know, neither of us have seen it.
I have seen it.
Oh, you have seen it?
Yeah.
You just don't remember it.
Oh, I do remember it. I went to, when I was this, because remember, I think I said a little while back that when I lived in Quebec, there was only ever like one English movie in the movie theater at any given time. And I also have a friend who has, he's a very close friend. We're still friends because he moved to London. So we still like hang out regularly, but he has the worst taste in movies ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like he genuinely liked and appreciated the Warcraft movie.
Warcraft. I didn't see that one.
It was bad. He likes
the World of Warcraft one.
There was a World of Warcraft movie. It was terrible.
Okay. I trust you.
His theory on movies is that if he can go and see a movie and if he can eat popcorn while watching a movie, he doesn't particularly care if the movie is any good. He just likes the experience of being in a dark room and eating popcorn.
Yeah, no, that's an incredibly valid way to enjoy any kind of media. Is this an excuse for me to eat fists full of the world's oiliest popcorn, oiliest, saltiest popcorn? If so, I'm enjoying it. That's all that I want.
Yeah. So he took us to go see Battle LA, and mm-hmm. it was bad.
Like, it was bad. LA.
So like the thing is, like, when this kind of comes up with Stranger Things, where like all the songs that Stranger Things listens to and all the movies they reference are all like the bangers of the 80s that we remember 40 years later. But like,
yeah,
really, like there were just as many like, you know, crap movies that and like, you know, 99 on the top 100 songs that came out in those times. We just don't remember them. And I feel like Battle LA was one of those.
Yeah, I've not seen it. I did look up some movie trivia around it that I would love to share with you really quickly.
Sure.
Also, this was a movie about aliens, wasn't it?
Yes, it's basically aliens. Okay. Aliens invade Los Angeles and the brave and great people of the U.S. Marine Corps, P.S. join the Marines, go and do Marines stuff to kill aliens and save the Earth. And also, you should join the Marines. That was basically the thesis of the movie.
Now, you say it was a bad movie, but it did grow. Did you know this? It grossed over $13 million in its opening day.
That's
which
bad,
was,
isn't it? That's really
on.
Bad.
You say it's bad. You say it's bad. What was the budget of this movie?
A lot.
It was $70 to $80 million. So it didn't get it back in the opening day, but it did. It wasn't a flop. It made it back eventually. You say it was bad, but it actually was the best opening day for movies in 2011 until Fast Five came out, which was just the best. It's so good. I would like to point out that the movies it was going against were Red Riding Hood, the grimdark one with Amanda Seyfried. I don't know. I never saw that one. I vaguely recall that. And also the hit Disney classic Mars Needs Moms. So it didn't have great competition, and then it did lose its number one spot a week later when Everyone's favorite movie about an animated reptile? I never know. When Rango came out, you remember Rango? You remember a hit movie Rango?
I feel like this is the first time I've ever heard that word in my life.
You know, the movie where Johnny Depp plays a lizard or a gecko or something.
That's the Quentin Tarantino movie where he kills a bunch of slave owners.
Rango Unchained. That's the one.
I will tell my movie experience. I saw The Iron Giant for the first time last week. Yeah.
I saw The Iron Giant when I was a kid, and I fell asleep in my entire family fell asleep in the movie theater. So I always grew up thinking everyone hated this movie. Come to find out, it's actually many people's favorite movie. So I need to watch it as an adult, and I need to.
It's the kind of movie that you would make a video about, I think.
Yeah. I've heard people describe it as it's a movie about like if a gun could talk. Is that accurate?
What if E.T. was a 3-story tall killer robot?
Okay. See, it's making it sound good. Why did I fall asleep in the theater?
I don't know.
Why did I fall asleep like it was Battle LA?
I don't know. I'm making a concerted effort in 2023 to watch more movies. So I'm going to watch this. Next, I'm going to watch Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, please do.
I watched the first 20 minutes of it and I'm like, this is good. But then I had other things to do. So I will get back to it.
Yeah, that's fine. You got to have the popcorn. Mm-hmm. Can I give you one final fact about Battle LA?
Okay.
And it's just because, so I wanted to look up if it won any awards because we keep saying it's a bad movie. It did win an award.
Was it a Razzie?
It was not a Razzie. It was a BMI TV Music Award, which I guess is an award for music in some capacity. It did win that award. I don't know anything about this award show. Don't even know if it's a show. It is on Wikipedia. It gives you like a table of all like the awards, the categories, the nominees, and the result. This one has no category. So I don't know if they just forgot or if there is no category and it just won like a music award. Wow. So the music must be good.
See, this is the kind of movies that 10 years later, you don't remember because they were not only bad, but they weren't bad in an interesting way.
Yeah.
Like there are like what's it called? It wasn't like The Room or like there are some bad movies that are like a Star Wars prequel or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
Where like it's bad in a way that it's so bad that like you kind of want to watch it just to be like, what the hell happened?
Like, whoa, I got to see this is going to be wild. This one just sort of looks gray.
Yeah.
So anyway, what we're going to talk about something that's vaguely connected to this.
Kind of. There's a little bit of a connection. But first of all, this is, as far as I can recall, we keep forgetting a podcast.
This is a podcast. I want to go into this year with more confidence. This is a podcast.
Did you see that somebody made a bar graph of how long our intros have gotten episode by episode? And it's...
Did someone do that?
They did part of it. I haven't seen the completed thing, but... It's
that's good. Yeah, we need more data about our show. That would be very fun for me. Thank you for doing that. This is a podcast, everybody, as we keep saying, about ancient aliens and about ancient astronaut theory, debunking conspiracy theories, and at the same time looking into the really cool history of people, places, events, artifacts, all of these cool things. And I'm one of the hosts of this show. My name is Scott Nicewander. I know nothing. I don't even know what award Battle LA won. I'm one click away from finding out and I don't even want to do it.
My name is Tristan Johnson, and I somehow do this. This is one of the big ones. I will say that this is, as we are doing a sort of crawl through of Ancient Aliens, this is one of the last bits of season one of Ancient Aliens. So we are sort of coming up on a threshold. This one, and I think the next one that we're doing next week are both, they're sort of related, and also they're part of this. But we are basically spending today, we're spending a bit of time in the Second World War II.
The Second World War II.
Yeah.
There was a First World War II, then they had a sequel, World War II, and now we're in that one.
Yeah. So we're talking about, if you think about it, there kind of was two World War IIs. There was the one that started in 36 and ended in 45, and the one that started in 39 and ended in 45. If you really think about it.
I want to add some context to something, to you know, us saying that we're almost through season one of Ancient Aliens. Just some quick follow-up context. There were only 5 episodes mm-hmm. in season one.
Yep.
So, and then other seasons have 10, 12, 15, 22. Season four really went for that 22 episode route. So we're going to be doing this podcast for a while.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to be old men in retirement mm-hmm. homes getting mad at an episode of a podcast, an episode of a TV show that came out in 2016 or something.
It'll still be going.
But yeah, like today we're doing one of the biggest UFO events that's considered like one of the most incontrovertible UFO yeah. sightings ever.
That's interesting that you say that because I've never heard of this, I don't think. So what is this? What happened?
So this was the Battle of Los Angeles. And that's the name of the, that's how the Battle LA thing.
That's how the Battle connection. Of LA came out. Okay, so that was not a documentary, of course, because it didn't originally. The real Battle LA did not have Aaron Eckhart in it. But it was a reenactment of a real event, is what you're saying.
And not even that. It was like, it basically just took the name of a UFO event and then had another movie that took place in Los Angeles.
It was trying to capitalize on the name Battle of LA.
Yes.
That's how it beat out Mars Needs Moms, I see.
Is the aliens, they needed mm-hmm. an out-alien. Either way, basically what this is the idea that this major event that happened in 1942 in Los Angeles was a government cover-up. And I'll kind of get into the little bits about what it is, but basically that there was a big fight where a bunch of anti-aircraft guns went off in the middle of the night in LA, and people claim that they saw like a big disc-shaped object in the sky, and that there was a moment where literally all of the searchlights were pointing at this UFO, and like everybody saw it with like all of this vision. And then the battle ended, and the government said it was a weather balloon. And
of course they did. Of course they did. Mm-hmm. Now you did attach here in the outline what looks to be a newspaper, mm-hmm. A newspaper article
Times.
About it. The LA Times, of course they would know about it. They're also in LA. And there are photos of like the lights pointed at something, like the searchlights all pointed at some unified pointing at something mm-hmm. in the sky, which looks really interesting, but I couldn't tell you what they're pointing at.
So according to Ancient Aliens and UFO people, they believe that this is either aliens or it is right. some sort of advanced, you know, Area 51-esque technology
cover up
that was covered up. Yeah. So the way that they talk about this is that, you know, you can't explain all the people, all the eyewitnesses, so many eyewitnesses.
Right.
And at the same time, there was a context of during World War II, people seeing UFOs, which they called Foo Fighters, which is
like
going to be the
band.
Like the band. Yeah. And we're going to talk about Foo Fighters next week. So that's sort of like, that's our sort of World War II two-parter, right?
Cool.
So the World War II pilots were seeing things reportedly that this big battle happened and everyone was looking at it. So like, how could you possibly controvert this? This is a UFO that literally got shot at by anti-aircraft guns.
Yeah. I mean, I'm seeing the pictures right now.
First of all, let's start with like the story about what happened, the facts of the stuff that happened.
Yeah. Hit me with it.
So on the evening of February 23rd, 1942, there were some radar reports and such going back and forth that were basically warning that there was a possible Japanese attack coming to the American West Coast. This is very soon, like, you know, just a couple months after Pearl Harbor. And America had just a few months earlier declared war against the Empire of Japan. So,
gotcha.
You know, 3 years into World War II, the U.S. decides to finally, or 2 years into World War II, the U.S. decides to finally join in.
You know, as the American on this podcast, you know, I just have to say, you know, maybe we're we're like wizards, right? You know, what Gandalf says, we show up right only when whatever he's, you know what I'm trying to say, we yeah, show up right when that, we, that, the best time yeah. the we show up always at the right time all that we need to.
Yep, that's exactly like word for word.
That was verbatim. Yep.
Tolkien, what a wordsmith.
Tolkien said that Gandalf said wizards are like America. We show up when we show up exactly when we're needed.
Yep.
Or when we want to.
Exactly. So basically what happened was is that this happened and meant that a lot of large cities on the California coast went into a sort of alert, which means that they were all like on the lookout for possible bombing raids happening from the Japanese. There had been some sightings in the last few weeks of Japanese submarines off the coast of the Pacific coast. So this was not unheard of. But then around 10, 11 o'clock at night, they basically determined that this was not a Japanese bombing run, and they decided to shut down the alarms and everything like that. So then it's very weird that at about 2 a.m. in Los Angeles that night, the air raid siren started going off.
Okay.
And in doing so, that meant that, you know, all of the air defense went on full alert. They started firing anti-aircraft batteries, which are like massive guns that fire like flak, which is like basically like big shells that are designed to blow up airplanes, right?
Yeah.
And they started firing over the city at what they saw was at some sort of object, possibly one with lights. And that for several minutes, the people of Los Angeles, by the way, at this time, because of the air raid threat, they had everybody turn off their lights. So the city was completely dark. And there's just explosions happening as these anti-aircraft guns are firing into the skies over LA. So there's no chance that anybody's asleep. So there's nothing to do because all the power's out. So you just are looking out your window while like people are like, are we being bombed right now by the Japanese? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, that's probably terrifying.
Definitely. People were worried about shell bursts people were seeing shell bursts going off the sky. And this lasted until about 3:16 in the morning. So almost an hour.
Wow.
And then and then everything went quiet. And then the government said nothing.
Said nothing.
After the incident,
gotta say something.
Yeah. So the military made a statement saying that there was an unknown aircraft that had been fired upon, but that no evidence of a crashed or damaged aircraft had been found.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, way too long for people's speculations to not go completely out of control.
Right.
The government pointed out that it was probably a weather balloon that set off their radar detection.
It's probably a weather balloon was going to be the alternate title of this podcast. Yeah,
it's probably a weather balloon. It's a weather balloon reflecting off some swamp gas.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, not exactly a thing that people bought really well.
No. It's got to be terrifying in the middle of the night to hear all those explosions and to see all those explosions in the sky. And then to hear like nothing, just silence. Your mind's going to wander. You're going to think something's being covered up.
The newspapers didn't really make a big, they didn't report on it because of like wartime censorship stuff. And so they did. So like the journalists didn't go out and like interview people or anything like that. But there were people whose eyewitness accounts came out later where they said they saw a cylindrical object in the sky and they saw lights and it moved in impossible ways. And all those kinds of things that seem to show up when you interview people years after an event.
Years later. Yeah. Where your mind is, you're making up details, you're adding things, subtracting things, and you're just trying to tell the most interesting story that you can.
And, but this event has become a staple of UFO mythology and considered one of the most credible UFO sightings because so many people saw it happen.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing. The main piece of evidence is that so many people saw eyewitnesses of the thing. But the main problem with that is that there's a lot of inconsistencies in these eyewitness accounts.
Okay.
For example.
What were they saying?
Well, for example, a lot of the people who said UFO stuff said they saw large disc-shaped objects with lights. But a lot of people pointed out that this disc-shaped object was probably, what looked like to them was a blimp or a balloon-like object.
All right.
But the thing is that in the wildness of speculation, some of the things that they thought the U.S. were covering up, because there's like a different government cover-up theory going on at the same time, that there were also people who said that they saw tons of Japanese fighters, that they saw like airplanes. Like some people claim they saw as many as 25 different Japanese airplanes and claim that they saw like, you know, that things got bombed and fired upon and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Some people even claim they saw paratroopers, and there were some people who were like looking around for any like landed paratroopers, which is extremely problematic because this was in the context of the American war in the Pacific, which meant that I don't know if you know much about American history at this point, but basically on orders from the government, a lot of the Japanese Americans who lived in places like LA were taken to concentration camps sort of further off the coast. And so you can imagine the rumors that there's Japanese paratroopers hiding somewhere in LA is not going to
be a great
thing for what Japanese people are left in the city, right?
No, everyone's just going to be like, I don't remember seeing that person around the other day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's no good.
And let's just say that your average white American in the 1940s was also not that able to tell the difference between Japanese and Chinese people.
Yeah, that too. Not great. Not great. Which is also why, if you can believe it, it's a part of American history. They really don't teach you in school.
I will say.
Kind of embarrassed about it.
Two things. One, Canada did it too. So we're not off the hook on that one. And one of our most famous environmental activists, David Suzuki, actually was a survivor of that. Another thing, another famous survivor of the Japanese internment camps was George Takei.
Yeah.
Mr. Sulu himself.
That's right.
And almost every Japanese American who is older than a certain age probably has some experience with this if they live on the West Coast. Another interesting fact about this is that this I did not know I was going to get into fortune cookies in this episode, but fortune cookies were like a staple of Chinese restaurants, but
they're an American invention, right?
Kind of. A Japanese restaurant invention. They're a Japanese thing.
Okay.
But then when all of the Japanese people were forced out of their homes and taken to these internment camps, a lot of Chinese families moved in and like took over the restaurants. And so they kind of like adopted the fortune cookie as part of like their thing. It's just a little bit there.
See, Iron Man 3 taught me that fortune cookies were made up by Americans, but
it might be like a Japanese American type thing.
All right. I'm willing to believe that Iron Man 3 did not teach me accurate history.
I did a YouTube video where I mentioned it in my video on Shinto, on the Japanese Shinto religion. And I remember I was living in Toronto at the time. I actually ran out down the street to the Chinese restaurant that was at the corner. And I just like bought two, like I was like mid filming and I ran out and bought two fortune cookies for the bit, for the role.
Oh, nice.
Fun stuff. Anyways, so some of the reports did say they saw like things moving at high speeds, while some saw them moving slowly in a straight line. So again, inconsistent about like how it moved. Some claim they saw shell bursts going off in the sky, which was the evidence that there was a battle, but the anti-aircraft guns were doing that the most part.
I'm also wondering, and I don't want to like skip ahead if you're going to bring this up, but I'm also wondering if since all of the lights were out, pitch black, I bet you could see the stars really good. So I'm wondering if some people may have just seen like shooting stars traveling in straight lines or something like that. I don't know, but.
Well, what we will get into a little bit later is there are some things that make light that move fast that are, that usually come out at times, like say, if you're responding to an air raid, which would be flares. We'll get there. But also, there's a lot of like inconsistencies in everybody's accounts that range from like, they might've seen a balloon that was moving around to like, I saw 20 Japanese fighter jets weren't a thing yet, but Japanese fighter planes.
Right.
To like, I saw a UFO.
It was a disc, it was a balloon, it was a, you know, what shape was it? Was it my neighbors playing late night Ultimate Frisbee? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And as we saw in our Area 51, as we saw in our Roswell episode, that sometimes when you have memories of different aspects of the same thing happening at a time, in the fullness of time, sometimes those things get mished together. Like if they had seen something like a flare and a weather balloon, and the flare was moving really fast and it was a light, and you also saw the balloon, that those like things can kind of get meshed together, because perception and memory are subject to bias and can be influenced by different factors, not just time, but also say stress or fear, which I imagine a lot of people were experiencing in that moment.
100%.
To a lot of people, those are probably flashbulb memories, which is a term we use for memories that we have very, very clear recollections of, but are actually the most likely to be inaccurate.
Yes.
And and so none of the people who go into trying to explain this as aliens ever really do any serious work to break down how valid any of these accounts are, really.
That's weird. Normally, they're pretty good about that.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we should probably... One of the things you do when you're dealing with eyewitnesses, eyewitnesses can be very useful for a lot of different types of research. But you do need to like act like a journalist, and that you have to cross-reference. Like you can't just take one person's word if you can avoid it. If there's that many eyewitnesses, right, you need to like corroborate. And it seems like these don't corroborate very well.
No.
Then there's also the issue of the physical evidence left over of such a battle, which is that there isn't any.
Well, it all happened in the sky.
So
it all happened in the sky, Tristan. There's no where would the evidence be on the ground? It happened in the sky. So I'd have to go up to the sky to find the evidence.
I don't know if you've ever heard of gravity, but it tends to take things to the ground.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see about that one, Isaac Newton.
But yes, despite the fact that a lot of people saw the all this stuff happen, there's no like physical evidence that it showed up. Mm-hmm. The military reports show that there were basically no aircraft or any objects found. And also that despite the fact that they had seen things on radar earlier, there was no tracking of any objects on radar during this event.
Gotcha.
Which also tends to imply that there maybe wasn't a physical thing there, or that it wasn't something, you know, that like a UFO, which would have maybe shown up on radar.
Okay. All right. I'm sure we'll get to it, but I'm looking at the newspaper clipping again. There's a lot of photos of stuff, bullet holes and the lights shining at the sky. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So like that. And the other thing too, is that there were claims of like people seeing shell bursts going off in the skies above Los Angeles. But the thing is that those shell bursts would have gone off at high altitude because they were firing at what they thought would be airplanes.
Yeah, in the sky.
Yeah, so it also wouldn't have been a thing that they would have been able to see that well either. The only physical evidence we have of anything is like a little bit of shrapnel from the shells used to fire the anti-aircraft guns.
Oh, but we knew... But that's not... That's just evidence the anti-aircraft guns shot.
Yes.
They did their thing. That's not evidence that there was actually anything that they hit.
Mm-hmm.
It's evidence that anti-aircraft guns shot stuff, which people knew because they could hear it and see it.
Yes.
Okay. So not great evidence.
No. There's really like, their evidence is nothing.
It would be equivalent to me being like, I saw a ghost and I got scared and I threw my shoe at it. And you're like, well, do you have evidence that there was a ghost? I'm like, yeah, I'm missing a shoe. It's like, that's not evidence of the ghost. Yeah. That is evidence that you threw your shoe, though.
Exactly. And this one wasn't even trying to do insurance fraud. So it's not even a guy wearing a mask or a hologram or something.
Unbelievable.
So one of the major, so basically one of the things we got to point out, and this is like, we got to look at like what actually does fit the evidence of what actually happened.
Yeah.
And the one that is the most logical explanation, or the one at least the government puts forward, is that it was a weather balloon.
Here they go again.
Because apparently the night of the Battle of LA was actually good weather conditions to launch a weather balloon.
Okay.
And also that a weather balloon is consistent with the sort of lack of showing up on radar, and also the lack of physical evidence of anything.
Right.
So a weather balloon fits, and also it does corroborate with several of the eyewitness accounts that said they saw something like a balloon or a disc. You know, you can imagine that from the ground, a balloon might look like a disc.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is that it could have set off some panic, because there was some concern that the Japanese were going to strap bombs onto balloons and sort of drop them over the U.S. that way. I think there actually was a case where that did happen, but I don't know if anybody ever got hurt with that.
Oh, no.
The other possible explanation is that a lot of what they saw was possibly a flare, or that the anti-aircraft like sort of the air defense was on high alert because of the false alarm that happened early that night. And okay. that something like a flare was used during, say, like an aircraft training exercise or something like that. And
there
that
goes
set
again.
Off the
It's always
sort of,
weather balloons and training exercises.
Because, you know, they were on high alert because, you know, they were 3 months into a war.
yeah. They were 3 months into a war that started 3 months ago, according to them.
Mm-hmm. And the flares would be that the flares would align up with the visions of seeing something moving erratically and quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And also it would also line up with there being no radar tracking. So if it wasn't even a false alarm and it was just like sort of a training exercise, then mm-hmm. that would explain everything they did. Although scaring the bejesus out of the people of LA was probably not the smartest way to do it. So that
not
way doesn't
great.
Have the doesn't have a lot of weight to it. I feel like the weather balloon and like overreaction makes a lot more sense to me, but flares could also explain it.
Fair enough.
The other example, which is that what set off the sort of over alarm was a blimp.
A blimp. That's like a balloon. It's mm-hmm. like a disc. I mean, it's not really like a disc, but you know, it's inflatable.
Mm-hmm.
It can be in the air.
It is a balloon.
Yep.
And most famous would probably be the Goodyear blimp, which was known to fly over that area.
Okay. Goodyear.
It would be pretty funny if they shot down the Goodyear blimp.
That would be actually really funny. I mean, this happened in February. It's the start of a year. They'd be like, this is actually a bad year for us, huh? What a bad omen.
The worst year blimp.
The worst year blimp.
But again, that, you know, this is the real answer is that we don't really 100% know because there's no evidence left behind of whatever it was that set off. So we have like eyewitness accounts. We have like reports from the military, but nothing that really gives us a solid answer as to what it was. So those are just a bunch of possible explanations that require
possible ideas.
But most of the thing is that they require a lot less assumptions than, say, extraterrestrials somehow made it to Earth and their main thing that they wanted to do was mess with Los Angeles. It's not as exciting, but they are more consistent with evidence and have a more solid basis in reality, which I feel like gives it some points.
Yeah, they really didn't. Aliens came to Earth to mess with Los Angeles because they really hated the famed 1941 movie that I will look up called, they hated Citizen Kane.
that'll do it.
Aliens came to Los Angeles because they hated Citizen Kane, which came out in 1941, and they said
they were mad at Orson Welles for the prank that he played in the 30s, and
they said that's not how we would do it. And then when he did Citizen Kane, they were like, and this is the last straw. So they came to Earth to mess with LA just for a little bit.
The most intense review bombing in history, and like the other thing too is that if this was like a military cover-up, that would be a little bit like, I mean, first of all, one of the reasons why a military cover-up would make sense at that time, like why they were like basically like the question, why were they so cagey about saying anything? Why were they giving this explanation? What really sticks out is wartime censorship, main thing, US in the middle of a war. They don't really know what's going on. And also, if it was like a weather balloon that set off their air defense, it would also be an admission that they were sort of that they just wasted all of that and they like caused that freak out for no reason, which would definitely not be good PR for the military.
A little embarrassing.
Yeah. And if it was a UFO and they were just covering it up, the main thing that I always say about conspiracy theories and cover-ups is that it would take a lot of coordination and cooperation of different agencies and branches of the government for decades without a single leaker.
Yeah.
Which there's this, I gotta find this at some point because it's really important for talking about this kind of stuff. There's this number that people show where that sort of gives always like a lot of the holes in conspiracy theories, which is that like the more people who would need to be involved to make the conspiracy happen increases the chance of somebody leaking it or something getting out like exponentially to the point where like even if you have like, you know, 50, 60 or like 100 people who need to be involved to keep it under wraps, by that point, it's like almost guaranteed that someone's going to find out about it. And that's why every time the US does a real conspiracy theory, like say I don't know, overthrow the elected leader of Iran to reinstall a monarch dictator, or overthrow the leader of a country trying to do land reforms, they can install a dictator to make sure that the profits of a fruit company are preserved. People find out about it really fast because it just like gets out.
It gets out, you know? What's that saying? Two can keep a secret if the other one's dead?
Basically. And if you think about it with like in the case of like, you know, the hundreds of people that would need to be like, hey, we discovered extraterrestrial life and we're just not going to tell anybody.
Yeah, because it'll be fun.
Yeah. And so you have to think about it like with the evidence in case. And again, look at context.
I love context.
Yeah.
People know this about
I have a
me.
Shirt to that effect.
Yeah.
I have the last no content, only context shirt ever made, I think.
I think so. Just about. Can't get enough of that context.
The other thing too is that there's this claim that it was like advanced technology. But again, it would put it way out of whack with anything that had come out at that time. And like the U.S., having advanced technology that they didn't turn around and use to, say, win World War II would have probably been a little weird. And the amount of secrecy wouldn't have been able to keep things secret for long. Like, this is America. Like, at that time, well, maybe not at that time, but during the war, the U.S. did have a secret weapons program. It was the Manhattan Project. And near the end of the war, President Truman couldn't even keep himself from bragging about his secret nuclear weapons program.
He wanted everyone to know about it.
Yeah, he tried to use it to intimidate people at, I want to say, the Yalta conference near the end of the war, where he basically was like, hey, don't mess with us. We'll nuke you now.
Yeah, we got big bombs.
Mm-hmm. A terrible weapon, as you would say. That also shows up in my Shinto video because when the U.S. used a nuclear weapon on the Japanese people, part of their unconditional surrender was they had to force the emperor to say on the radio that he was a human being and not a god incarnate, which was a little wild for a religion. Yeah, man. The American occupation History. Of Japan was a whole thing. Yeah. But it does seem like the main thrust in that is that if they did have some sort of advanced technology that they were hiding, that maybe it would have been used to win
they
World War II at
it.
Some point. Or that we would have found out about it by now because they would have implemented it in something.
They just really like those big bombs.
Mm-hmm. And furthermore, there's a lot of fear and there. Like, you have to also know that, like, why would something like this happen? And also that tensions were extremely high. The Battle of LA incident happened only a few months. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like 3 months? No, 2 months after Pearl Harbor. An event that famously freaked the shit out of a lot of Americans. There's a lot of paranoia on the West Coast about an air raid, and the attack on Pearl Harbor showed that the Japanese were, in fact, capable of striking U.S. targets. And so they thought that, you know, L.A., a major city on the American West Coast, would be one of those targets. And that there had been a false report earlier that night, which would have put a lot of people on high alert. So, you know, hair triggers and such like that. And it happened at night, which makes it also harder to see and like perceive things correctly. So
famously,
what people would have seen at night and in the dark during a high stress situation is harder to really credibly report later.
Yeah.
Hence why there were also, people claiming they saw tons of airplanes and saw all sorts of stuff.
We got to ask the cats. The cats have better night vision. Ask their cats. Show them pictures of aliens and then show them pictures of weather balloons and see which one they respond to more.
Oh my goodness. Cat research. Do it. I found out that
all those cats are dead now.
Yeah.
All of them
long
are dead.
I actually remember my wife is a psychologist, and one of the things that they have problems with is that they do a lot of animal psychology tests.
Mm-hmm.
I know because at my wife's office, they had like a doggy daycare where the people who had dogs would drop them off at the doggy daycare where the psychologists would do experiments, like psychological experiments on the dogs.
Okay.
Not like mean ones, but like testing the cognitive ability of dogs.
Sure.
Apparently, there is an issue with doing these kinds of tests on cats because cats are just completely non-cooperative.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
That checks out.
So there's
cats
actually
like, I have my own stuff I'm actually working on right now, so we can do this later.
Yeah, so it's like really hard to do sort of animal psychology tests on cats because they just won't go along with whatever
cats
it is you
always
do
feel like they have something else on their agenda that day.
Yeah, they're busy.
And I don't know why. Yeah, cats always seem busy and then they just sleep and you're just like, what do you have on your calendar today? And they're like, I can't. I'm going through some stuff, man.
Yeah. And I do think that the fear and peril paranoia and the sort of bad conditions for pointing things out and the cagey response of the government, all that kind of stuff together is making me conclude that like a lot of these claims really don't hold a lot of water to me. Now, that would be wild. But you know what isn't wild?
What isn't wild?
The great, great prices and wonderful content at nebula.tv/probablynotaliens.
We are not being sponsored by Nebula. We just are a part of Nebula, and we want you to listen to our show on there. Because here's the deal. When you listen to our show on Nebula, you get the next episode a full week early.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this now, you can listen. If you listen to this now and you're like, oh man, I want that Foo Fighters episode, you can listen to it right now. It's on Nebula. The people on Nebula are listening to that instead of this.
They're listening to, don't you want to be one of them? Don't you want to be cool?
Don't you want to be one of the cool kids? Peer pressure.
No, it helps out the show. And, you know, we talked about this before, but this we currently make no money on this show. And it would just help us out if we could at some point.
In fact, with hosting and editors, I think we've made negative money.
We've made negative a lot of money on this podcast. But we like doing it. And if you like the show and you have a couple bucks you want to throw to help support the show, there's a link in the description that we'll throw in there. What's the link? What's the proper
nebula.tv/probablynotaliens. And if you sign up for that, not only do you get the early episodes, but you also get a giant catalog of a bunch of amazing videos from a bunch of creators that are great, including the two of us. But also,
we're on there.
I know our audience. It's a lot of people you like. Trust me.
It is. It's a lot of people that you like or you are going to like. So there you go.
So that's nebula.tv/probablynotaliens. And now, let's sort of wrap up.
Let's wrap up. So like, all right. So you've got me here. Eyewitnesses, not very reliable. We've sort of covered that before. There's all sorts of other reasons why, why these strange events may have happened. But you were mentioning context earlier, and I'm a sucker for context. So what would be like?
So I think that a lot of this would show that people can be very easily, can have their memories get weird by them being exposed to a high stress situation or something that is in a context of high paranoia. You know, there is all emotions and tension were very high at this event, and that can cause a lot of warping of memory. Second of all, there's also always this desire. I kind of talked about don't underestimate the power of confirmation bias. If you want something to be true, you will be able to find the data to show it. And if you want something to be true, your memory can also change to fit with what you want to be true. That memory is like that. And eventually, if you do that enough times, you believe it yourself. Because it turns out our memory is bad, like really bad.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. And so this shows that when you do things like this, the important thing about working, because I am a firm believer that oral sources and oral history and eyewitness accounts are valuable. So I'm not trying to throw these out, but
absolutely,
there is a right way to do it. And it is tricky. It's more work because you have to corroborate, you have to verify, cross-reference with evidence and build your case, not just take the words of a few people. That's why the work of journalism is so hard and why the work of a lot of historians is so hard. You need to be doing this stuff. And in doing so, you have to be skeptical and you have to follow the evidence where it leads. And if you have any sort of inscrupulous, desired outcome instead of, just looking at it as it is, you're going to make these kinds of connections.
Absolutely. And just to add to the point of how bad our memories are, sometimes Tristan and I will press record to do this podcast and then we'll start talking and we'll forget that we're recording a podcast. And then we'll do an entire 10 to 15 minutes at the beginning of each episode where we're just talking, we're just hanging out as friends, and then we'll suddenly snap into, oh, that's right, we've been recording this whole time. It happens every single week somehow.
Yeah.
And it's not planned, and it's not a bit that we do. It's real, and you can't prove otherwise.
That's not even cap. Like, I feel like sometimes because we talk for a while before we start recording.
But
the line between those two actually can get a little messy. And sometimes I'm like, oh, did we talk about that before? Anyways, the other thing too is that media and the way that things are written about or shown can also affect our memories, even if they're first person memories of that event. And that also is a big thing, because one thing I am sitting on is that photo that you showed, that I showed you.
Yeah, with the lights and everything.
Yeah, it is a real photo of the Battle of LA, but it has been photoshopped. They did photoshop it to make the UFO part of it more prominent. And one group that did that, and published that photo, was as promotional material for the 2011 film Battle of LA.
Oh, no! We're back, baby! Aaron Eckhart got me! And he got me with his charming smile and his fully formed two halves of his face after he was done filming Batman. I can't trust anyone anymore. I thought I could trust Aaron Eckhart, but apparently I can't.
I was trying to think of a line of Two-Face in that movie.
He 50-50. Says, 50-50. Two-Face said, catch you on the flip side, Batman, and he flipped a coin. And then it was awesome.
Man, he really should say that in something. Two-Face should be like, catch you on the flip side.
Catch you on the flip side, baby.
I forgot that my favorite little Batman thing about Two-Face, while we're just on the Two-Face tangent.
Yeah, we've already forgotten we're recording a podcast.
There was a comic where like they were trying to do therapy on Harvey Dent to get, because like his whole thing is that he has brain damage and he can't actually make decisions anymore. That's why he flips his coin, right?
Right, yeah.
And so what they were trying to do is to work him to be able to make more decisions. They were giving him like more and more sided dice so that he could think of more possible decisions to make. I think it was the Arkham Asylum comic that was like painted.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Now, how is with him using dice, is that going to get in the way of the open gaming license?
There we go. We got it in. My hyperfixation for the last week, the open gaming license in Dungeons & Dragons.
We can't go down that rabbit hole. Thank you so much for listening to the show.
Yeah. If you want to follow up with what's going on in the world of this podcast, you can go to @ProbsNotAliens on Twitter, where we post when new episodes come out, and we post post pictures and we retweet all the fan art and everything like that. Scott, though, I wanted to watch a film from a studio that famously makes fun and cute movies for young people, actually shows the depths of how the creative drive can not only hurt you but those around you in a sort of bittersweet way that is heart-wrenching. Where would I find content of that very specific type of taste?
That is so specific, Tristan, but I you are in luck. I have a YouTube channel called NerdSync, NERDSYNC, all one word, and I just put out a very long video essay about a Studio Ghibli film called Whisper of the Heart, and I did it with my partner Emily, who also wrote a lot of parts of it and is in it. And it's a video that we made about being creative individuals in a relationship, much like the main characters of that movie. And we put a lot of ourselves into it, and we're glad that the response has been good. Even though YouTube does not want to promote it, they don't like it. They say it's not a good video, but people say it's a good video. So I appreciate that. And Tristan, where can people find more stuff that's the exact opposite? That's the exact polar opposite of what I do. It would be videos that are...
It's a video where I make fun of nerds. where I talk about how nerds are lame and I beat them. Yeah. I give them swirlies. I run a YouTube channel called Step Back, which is all about basically talking about the past and why the past is important for understanding the present. If you're listening to this and everything has gone according to plan, you should be able to see a video on the topic of the video is called There Have Always Been Trans People. And it talks about how as long as there has been gender, there have been transgender people. Going to the point where we have evidence of trans people existing at a time when there were still mammoths. So,
Egyptian trans people?
Sort of like Neolithic trans people. But as far as this podcast goes, if you want to help get this podcast into more people's earballs, you can go review this on your podcast app of choice, whatever that is. Trust me, it helps. now there are algorithms and ratings sort of help these people find
this
show.
Oh my gosh, it helps so much. It helps so much. And we pointed out last week, you don't even have to write a long review if you don't want to. Here's one that just says, so fun. And the full review is, love it, so informative and fun. And that's all you have to write. And there are most people do write longer stuff. Here's one that just says, great podcast. And the review is, great podcast. And that's all we're asking for. But if you do want to write longer reviews, I do read them and they are very nice. And so we appreciate it. Thank you so much. And if you want to share this show, you can do so at a very simple website, probsnotaliens.com. It's got links to everything, all the places where you can listen to this show, all of our social media. You know, we plug Twitter. I'm not on there very much, but you know, I'm trying to get better at maybe Instagram. I don't know. Instagram for podcasts? We'll see how that goes.
The Instagram podcast. That sounds like the pitch for like some sort of Silicon Valley mess. It's the Instagram of podcasts. But keep in mind that this podcast really does well because people are sharing it with their friends and telling other people about it. So probsandaliensplace.com is the place to send people, but telling people about this show really does help.
Very much so. And until next time, my name is Scott Nicewater.
I'm Tristan Johnson, and the truth is out there. Probably.
That's what one of those cats would say. The cats that saw the Battle LA, they would be purring. They'd say, probably.